Hello, Kantians. Today's podcast is brought to you by PhilosApothecary.com. They have the most affordable CBD products without any sacrifice to quality. And right now, there's free shipping on all orders in the United States. And for the rest of this week, ending May 17th, 2020, there is 15% off of all orders. Use coupon code MOTHER at checkout to get the discount. On today's podcast, I am joined by the one and only, soon to be a PhD holding, Mark J. Riley. I hope you guys enjoy. Let's get it started.
Coors Banquet, brewed in the Rockies.
And we are live.
Hey.
Welcome to the podcast. Is it Dr. Mark Riley now?
No, it is not.
Oh my goodness. When do you get the title?
Assuming that I succeed, it will be towards the end of the year.
Okay.
Still a whole finishing up process, and then I have to go through my Viva.
Okay. So you're still kind of in the process of that in your last year in school.
Yeah, exactly.
Where are you attending?
The University of Aberdeen. In Scotland, yeah.
Scotland's one of the places I've always wanted to go. I actually have family out there.
Oh, really? Do you know where?
I don't know. It's like a cousin of some sort. I have family that originated in Scotland. When I got my ancestry kit back, Scotland was one of the places highlighted. Gotcha. Where we like kind of went through from Eastern Europe. I'm mainly Slovakian and Russian, I found out.
I always took you for a Slovak.
Hey, I have the nose. I have the nose for it. So, cool, man. So are you, I don't know how the process works. I'm not that smart. You and Greg are like two of the smartest people in my life. So I'm just not sure. You went up there to start your master's, correct?
No, I did. Finished my master's simultaneous to doing my PhD, which was an awful choice, more or less. But that part's done at least now. I did that through University of Alaska.
Okay.
UAA, Anchorage. And finished.
So partnership? Was it in partnership with Aberdeen? Or?
Totally separate. I started at Alaska, got through like not even a semester, I think. And then I saw this opportunity for this PhD program and it fit the sort of writing that I was doing. So I applied to it on a whim and it just happened to work out.
That's awesome.
My wife was able to find a PhD program as well in Scotland. So everything just fell into place real quick.
I didn't know Lauren was working on her PhD as well.
That she is.
That's awesome. And is she about like the same progress that you're at? She has about a year left.
Yeah. She's finishing up her writing up and then we both have to defend our theses and that's it.
So what is yours on? What are you focusing on your thesis?
Roughly it's, the depiction of trauma in fiction. But it sort of branches out to other aspects of military fiction. The depiction of gender and the use of language and all sorts of different technical parts of writing.
Have you, talking about military fiction, have you read, what is it? Is it Jack Carr's new book series?
I don't believe so.
He's a former Navy SEAL. And I guess he did like 20 years in the service. And then he always wanted to be a writer. So on the whim, he just started writing and started publishing a series. And now I think they're coming out with a television series starring Chris Pratt.
Oh, nice.
Let me see what it's called. Yeah. You served in the military. I definitely want to discuss that. Sure. But do you read a lot of military fiction like Stephen Koontz and Tom Clancy and stuff like that?
So it wouldn't be too much those sort of things where they sort of serialized fiction, or like they're just putting out lots of
like pulp fiction.
Yeah.
Commercial fiction.
It's less of that. It is more, I don't know, like what's regarded as the classic literature of war fiction sort of things, the things that carried by Tim O'Brien. What other big ones? All different wars, I'm trying to think. But also contemporary, more short stories, because that's what I'm writing. So there's a lot of collections, and it's still a pretty new subject matter, at least regarding war in Iraq, war in Afghanistan.
It's true, because now people are able to really talk about more of the details in those wars.
Right? Yeah, they say it takes about a decade for, and obviously there's exceptions to everything like this, but about a decade for writing about a war to sort of start churning out with regularity. And it's also distinct since these wars are borderline ongoing. So yeah, that's a dynamic that we haven't really experienced before, which is kind of interesting.
It is very interesting. I mean, with that and also a pandemic going, I think in our lifetime, we've had very unique circumstances.
Yeah, if not, at least generation defining.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Perfect. And then Lauren's working on her PhD. What is her focus on?
Her focus is sort of a business management type deal, research into gender inequality in business management. I think her focus is in the tech field.
Okay.
But her, yeah, very different projects. Mine includes absolutely. Like, creative writing. So like there's a actual research component in existing literature, but then there's a putting it into practice, which is sort of a unique PhD. There's not very many PhDs in creative writing in the world. So I got really fortunate to get into this one. Lauren's is, I suppose, a more traditional PhD, where it's applied sort of research.
You're not regurgitating, but you're essentially learning as much as you can about a subject matter and what's going on, and then applying some kind of solution or some kind of hypothesis to it.
Yeah, they're definitely, I mean, they are, there's a reason they're the same thing in some sense, but at the same time they're wildly different.
So talking about writing, most writers have like a process. I fancy myself a writer from time to time. I wrote poetry basically nonstop in high school for 2 years straight. Just reading a lot of fiction, probably about 4 books a week, and then writing 10 plus poems a week, just writing. And I had a process when I would do it. Like there was just like a simple thing, just like similar to a basketball player with their free throw shot. Right. What is your writing process when it comes down to like actually sitting down and creating something?
My writing process is basically terrible and the opposite of everything recommended. It is sporadic and not with a daily routine. I'd say I usually get surges of inspiration where I write out all the general details of a story in one sitting, and then usually, at least with short story writing, which is most of what I do, at some point, then I come back to it and usually just in one sitting, just write through beginning to end the story. And obviously, that's not the final version a lot of the time, but it is, just like late at night, I'll just start writing and then I'll end up staying up through the night and writing like 12 hours straight, sometimes more. And that's how I create them, which is not anything that any writing program that I have been a part of has recommended.
No, and I'm sure like for me, I especially when I was in college and there was something that creatively needed to be written, whether it be philosophy or for an English paper or anything like that, there was definitely booze induced writing sessions. So yeah, just pounded down beers and vodka, and it's like All right. Let's see what this formulates to.
Yeah, I can't say I do that so much, but maybe sleep deprivation as substitution for intoxication.
I would say so. You knew me back in the times where I wasn't sleeping. And it's a blessing and a curse. For creative writing, you definitely can replace intoxication as far as inducing some kind of creativity. Or maybe like kind of inducing out-of-the-box thinking.
Yeah, and I think it breaks down at least one level of self-criticism and self-editing that prevents you from getting into it.
True. Now, writing is just a process of editing and re-editing and editing and then re-editing. True. How long do you think you spend actually creating and then, versus editing?
The editing is way, way, way longer. I mean, it depends on what you consider the finished product. I guess the first time I think of 2/3 of my story, I have an idea of them from beginning to end. Some of them I figure out as I go. But then, I mean, I'm not a particularly published or successful writer. I'm still in the aspiring writer phase of my life. So
you'll be famous one day.
The editing process seems like forever, I would say. Most stories just keep getting revisited.
That was my least favorite part about the creative writing process, because it's also the most critical. I can't say no one. I'm sure there's someone in history who was just like so far past our intellect that was just like, yep, I can write a perfect story in one go. Or I can write a perfect poem out of just, whoop, on a whim, right? Right. But it's very rare, right? It's not the common denominator. And I hated editing. Hated it. I don't know why. Now I go back and I look at my old poems and I'm like, this I should have edited. And I published these. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Thankfully not many people purchased.
I usually find once I'm actually doing the editing rewarding, it's the motivation to do it because I'm not unlocking the story in any sense. If it's already written that I know what happens from the beginning to the end, then it's just that much harder to write, that much harder to edit. But usually when actually doing it, there's usually more to be found in a lot of cases.
True.
Yeah, poetry, I enjoy writing poetry, but I can't even imagine being stuck in the editing process for poetry.
No, because I mean, there's only so much you can do with a few stanzas,
right?
Really, you know, it's not like, oh, I've written 50 paragraphs, right? Or I've written, 20 pages in this short story. There's a lot to play with there, where it's like, okay, you can, that can almost seem like a daunting, endless task, but there is an end to the goal. Right. Whereas poetry really could just be, there's not much substance to work with in most poems, unless you're writing an epic, I guess.
Yeah. True.
So you were in the army, right? How long were you in the army for?
Just one term, 4 years.
4 years. Now you, I guess that's the Air Force mainly. Because usually it's like 6 years, 4 years active and 2 years reserved.
Yeah, I guess I technically had inactive ready reserve, where I could have been recalled for another 4 years. But there's no other responsibilities aside to be able to answer that call. But I've completed that as well now.
Well, first of all, thank you for your service.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you for your family's service.
Yeah. My mom will hear this. She'll probably email you or something.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. What were your duties in the army?
I was a 68 Whiskey, a combat medic. I did some medical stuff, mostly in more clinical settings. I deployed to Afghanistan once. A lot of patient administration stuff, and then probably more than anything else, general soldiering of maintaining vehicles and areas on base and stuff like that.
Yeah, looking busy.
Yeah.
A lot of my friends that have served, right, especially when they deploy and it's just kind of like a downturn in activity, like, okay, what are we going to do to pass the time?
Yeah.
That's cool though. And then I know that you were at UMass Dartmouth before you joined the Army, correct? Yes,
that is correct.
Were you studying English there as well?
Sort of. I was an English major. However, I never got past English 101 because I was just swept up in social life of my first college experience and stuff like that. I was just a terrible student and blew my first chance at finishing all that and off into the military to figure my life out.
I'm actually kind of in the same boat. And so it's refreshing to hear someone as smart as you to be like, yeah, you know, there was other priorities,
yeah,
back then, and school wasn't one of them.
Yeah, I don't know if it was particularly right or rewarding, or certainly wasn't a smart choice, but
right
there, I won't say that I regret it because I had many good times and have many good friends from that time.
Well, and that's I'm in the exact same boat. Where, you know, especially with the fraternity that we had up there, which we'll definitely discuss. I mean, it was just a lot of great memories,
right,
that were created, but not great grades, right, that were created. So for my listeners who don't know, and the reason for the name of this podcast is I was a philosophy major with an emphasis on ethical studies. So Immanuel Kant was like someone we studied constantly in ethical studies. But I actually failed philosophy 101 or intro to philosophy twice because I didn't do the work. I was barely there. And if I was there, I was either hungover or just not there.
Yeah. But not there. So, that's the real way to mess up your experience.
Yes. Yeah. Very, very true. So how long were you at UMass Dartmouth? Were you there for a few years before you joined the Army, or was it like, oh man,
I was there.
It's been a year and a half, or
I was there for 2 years. I did finish a number of courses. Those that I actually attended, I did perfectly fine in, just very average, but I just missed many classes. And so I went through 2 years there. I was involved socially, but not academically. And then in my third year started and they pulled my full ride. And so all of a sudden it was this enormous, impossible cost. And they retroactively pulled it also. So I was immediately sunk into debt that I was not expecting.
I know how that is.
Yeah. So then with a fresh, I don't even remember, it was like $40,000 of debt, I bailed and went into the military to fix that. But I was able to do so in my first 2 years. I think I basically didn't spend any of my money except on alcohol. And I had an enlistment bonus at the time. So those two things combined, a diet of exclusively cheap liquor and an enlistment bonus, took care of student debt.
Boom.
Yeah.
So with mine, I had the GI Bill through my mom, and that ran out, I think, last year. So we pulled a FAFSA loan, and I still had about 2 years left.
Yeah.
And it was about to run out. So instead of using it that semester, I used a FAFSA loan for the year. Yeah. And then my last semester, when I came back from my first summer with Vivint, that was my last semester with the GI Bill. And it turns out, instead of the full semester, I had 1 month of the GI Bill left. That was it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Damn. And just like you, I mean, I didn't accrue $40,000 of debt, but I was no longer able to afford college.
Right.
And so Vivint offered me an opportunity where I could work longer and travel. So that's when I left, and I don't regret it, but it also probably wasn't the wisest time to leave because of circumstances. It was right after, like 2 days after the ad drop period is when I dropped out. So I owed not only UAA money, but I owed the government money back. So
yeah,
it was like $6,000 or so.
Yeah, they can really get you in a bind. I was on state scholarship in Massachusetts. They have standardized testing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you score in the right percentile, you get money based on that. So I had that, but then there was like tax complications with my family. And then that meant that I didn't qualify for that, combined with nobody cared because I was a shitty student anyway. but I was also living on campus, so it was just all sorts of things that were already established. It was my second year of living like that, and it all got pulled away, and I tried to odd job through it, but it didn't pan out.
No, and there's only so much you can do. I mean, when I was in college, I was working three jobs.
Yeah, the recommendation I got from the school, the finance, the bursar's office, this was called, they were like, can you just say that you're homeless? And then just back that up. It's like, well, how do I back that up? Just like, oh, just like actually be homeless. Go into a shelter or something like that.
Just sleep in your car, Mark. It's very simple.
Oh, I didn't have a car. I didn't have a license. Oh. So I was, I don't know, 22, something like that.
I guess you don't need it in New England. Like when you're up there, it's there's so much public transportation. And everything's pretty close by what you need, I'm assuming. I've never been to like the Boston area.
It is in Boston, but I was in the New Bedford area. Things are a bit more spread out, not as bad as probably the western half of the U.S. still. But it definitely resulted in some unfortunate walks, especially in the wintertime. But I was just young and didn't care. And that also being ingrained with fraternity, other people in school, there was always rides every which way. I was really fortunate. Couches to crash on and rides and all sorts of other things that helped me drink and accomplish nothing for a couple of years.
Yeah. Best way to go through college, at least the first half.
Yeah.
So speaking of fraternity, you were a member of Phi Kappa Theta at UMass.
Yeah.
Where you originally pledged. After the Army, I'm assuming were you stationed at J-Bear?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so that's how you ended up there?
That's right.
After the Army, I mean, what compelled you to stay and continue your education at UAA?
For me, I started before I had gotten out, so I finished either one or two semesters, but they also gave me a good amount of credit for what I had already done at UMass.
Okay.
And so I was already, I don't even know, probably already halfway through a degree, if not a little more. And then I was just on the right track. It was a state school, so it was pretty affordable with my military stuff. And I was able to find a job there right out of the bat at the university. So everything fell into place, and I was just started to do overloaded schedules. I took, I don't even remember, I think it was two courses over the recommended. It was like seven a semester or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, so I could expedite it and go on to my grad degree before my GI Bill burnt out, which lasted me through all my last year of my PhD. So I did like half my bachelor's, my master's, and half a PhD, roughly.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I remember what job did you do at UAA? I remember you had like an office or like a little cubicle, didn't you?
Yeah, I got a job as a tutor at the learning center for like English projects, helping people use the tech and stuff like that. But then while I was still there, I was able to find a sort of a professional job with grants and contracts at the university.
That's right.
just, it started off as just a, I think, temp position, but eventually I worked into a regular position there. And I probably could have kept going. I would have had to take some different kind of classes to keep going, but it's not what I aspired to, but it was a good job.
It's interesting. Yeah, that's awesome.
Where the money comes and goes through university.
Were you at all involved in like the process of writing like grant underwriting and stuff like that, or?
Very minimally. I definitely had a few experience of actually helping in some submissions, proposals and the like, but for the most part, it was being familiar with the terms and conditions that the university had to meet in relation to whatever external funders. A lot of them were state and federal government, but also other nonprofit organizations, a few for-profit organizations, like the oil companies up there have some funding and stuff like that. But yeah, just mostly making sure that people were doing the right thing and managing all the money has to be filed in specific ways and stuff like that. Very administrative, bureaucratic stuff.
Making people, like, holding people accountable to their shit.
Yeah.
Hey, you haven't paid us. this money hasn't been moved here.
Right. Hey, you can't file this taxi ride as this. You have to either justify it the sus way or not do it or whatever. But I was, even as high as I got there, I was pretty low on the totem pole of telling people no. It was more so crunching numbers and putting them in boxes.
There you go. So something simple while you were in school, but also not too boring.
It was,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how exciting that job was. I just remember
I can't say that it was exciting. I think some people enjoy it more, accounting and numbers, that sort of thing. And certainly people that are more involved in it, there's more responsibility and stuff that comes with it. And it definitely is a function that makes some of the awesome research that's done at universities be able to be done. So that's cool.
Right. So, your time there, what also compelled you to start a Phi Kappa Theta chapter at UAA? Because I feel like there's a lot of people, like when I tell people that I was a member of a fraternity and also like the second round of founders, they're like, you helped start a fraternity? I'm like, well, a chapter, but
yeah
kind of, like kind of in a sense, yeah. It blows people's minds. Right, especially those that are like members of a long-standing chapter at an old university down in the South or anything like that.
Yeah,
right. To be a part of that history, what compelled you to start a chapter?
So as social as my experience was in college, it was also an early fraternity experience for me. It wasn't something that I ever planned or went out looking to do. I actually got into it because one of my friends was interested in doing it, friends from high school that we both were at the same school. And it was free event, so I was like, oh, I'll go along. And he ended up not doing it, and I ended up doing it probably because of the people that I happened to meet along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But the tenets of the organization and sort of mostly the social experience and how it, if done correctly, it did actually make positive recommendations for academia and other aspects of one's life if you actually follow what's being put out.
It's true.
And so
very true.
Even though I wasn't necessarily successful in my first go, I saw lots of people achieve greatly through the organization and what it offered, and definitely the bonds of brotherhood between individuals. It's the way I met my wife. Just lots of valuable things came to me through the fraternity, so I decided that it was something that if I was going to make Alaska my home for a college experience, then I wanted to bring it there, as difficult as that was.
Yeah, and there was a lot of work. So for people who don't know, starting any kind of organization is a lot of work. Starting anything that involves more than three people is a lot of work.
All the way back to the root, starting anything, period.
Yeah, exactly. Starting
a day is hard.
It is. Oh man, lately my wife's like, why are you so grumpy in the morning? I used to not. I used to be such a morning person. But I am just, I can't say that I'm like just burnt out, because I'm not even remotely close to that. I don't know if you know this, but I quit Vivint. About a month ago, and then I probably announced it like a week ago on Facebook, you know, made it Facebook official. But I'm working at Domino's right now just to pass the time as I go through the process of becoming a Border Patrol agent.
Right.
So it's, which takes months. I mean, I started this back in March, I think.
Yeah, the process. I'm curious where the inspiration for that came from.
It's a couple of things. So, I always, in the back of my mind, I wanted to serve in the military, to some capacity, and never really like shared that with people, or did anything about it.
Right.
Until probably about a couple months ago. No, before March, at least. It must have been like halfway through the summer, when I was in Dallas. I was like, man, you know, I think it's getting like my time's burning out, like right. The window's shortening of me to be able to enlist. And so I started speaking with a recruiter, and, you know, I ballooned in size. So since last time you saw me, when Mark last saw me, I was in like okay shape. Right. I wasn't like, I'm like clinically obese now, but it's because of still all the muscle mass that I have and then my beer gut.
Right.
So I, the recruiter took one look at me and goes, nope. he basically was like, look, dude, like right now, while things are slow, they're being super selective.
Right.
And one of the things that's going to automatically disqualify you is your weight. So I asked him, I'm 5'7", I'm about 240. When he saw me, I was 260. This was back in March. He's like, honestly, you got to drop down to 175. I'm like, okay, not impossible, but I haven't been 175 since like maybe freshman year of high school.
Yeah.
Like I've always been girthier. Like just, I mean, I've been like skinny, but like I always had muscle mass.
Big bone, dude.
Yeah. And so, I was like, 175, shit. I don't even know if I want to be that lean. Like, to be honest, like, don't want to go back to being like a long distance runner figure. Right. I still want to have muscle mass. And so I was looking at other ways to serve, serve our country in some capacity. And I've a lot of the Border Patrol agents down here are clients of Vivint, and I've set up a lot of them as well. And I always pick their brains, like, hey, how do you like it? What's the pay like? What's the lifestyle like? What's the job like? And I've only heard great things, and never saw myself in law enforcement at all, like ever. But it was a way that I could get my foot in the door with a government position that pays well, that's a lot more stable, because Vivint paid well, but it was 100% commission.
Right.
And that was really stressful. And I think that also abated my weight gain. Where you're just super stressed, and, you know, you might make $10,000 this month and then make absolutely shit the next. And you're like, okay. All right. So what did we do with that money? Okay. All right. So just looking for something a little bit more stable, serving in any way. And then an opportunity to get my foot in the door.
Right.
With government work, which is probably the most stable work you can get into, where it has it's one of the only few jobs that has a pension program, has benefits. So that's it. And so I put in my application through US jobs.gov.
Right.
And I put in, they were hiring for GS5, GS6, and GS7. And I'm like, well, I definitely don't qualify for those, right? The only government job I had was an educator and caretaker for children at J-Bear, which okay. I think I was a GS4 there. It's not. Decent pay, great benefits. But I'm like, okay, well, let me just put in for GS5. So I put in GS5, went through the application process. That application, for anyone who's interested in Border Patrol, takes about 2 hours just to do. Like, yeah. It's super long.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And they offered me about 3 weeks later. I had almost forgotten that I even sent in the application. And they responded with a job offer, a tentative job offer for a GS7 position. And which in law enforcement starts out at 70K. I'm like, well, that's exactly what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that'd be great money. That'd be about the same I was making with Vivint. Taxes are already paid. So great. Because when you're 1099, you have to pay on taxes, which got me into a whole fucking mess with the IRS, which I will not ever discuss on this podcast in detail. But hence another reason for a more stable job. But yeah, it was something just, you know, thinking more of the future for my wife and I, and like something that is going to be a little bit more fulfilling than direct to home marketing.
Right.
And then hopefully,
I don't know if that's a high bar to set, but I suppose it could have been something that you would enjoy.
It depends on what culture you're raised in, my friend. Hung out with a lot of Mormons, and I tell you this, direct to home marketing is their shiz. Holy crap. I mean, they're studs at it because they, you know, they sell religion for 2 years and they pay to do that. Right. When you go on a Mormon mission, it costs, I think it's about 10 or 15 grand that you have to pay up front. And so usually it involves a sponsorship, or maybe you're working a side job and like saving up to go do it. And then you sell religion door to door.
Yeah.
So a lot of the guys that become multimillionaires, which I bumped shoulders with, and one of which was my best man at my wedding. These guys were just good at it. They just made a ton of money because that's all they know.
Mm-hmm.
That was their first job, you know, was their mission. And then they came out and was like, okay, well, how do I apply those skills? Right. I didn't have that. So it was interesting. It was just a grind. So, but it did teach me some valuable lessons. That's actually what my last podcast episode was on. Was like, what did I learn from door-to-door knocking? And
yeah. Yeah.
What are some,
be interesting.
Well, and there's actually a lot of successful people that started out in door-to-door. That are like super successful now, haven't done door to door in decades, right? Like Mark Cuban started in door to door.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. Just the personal interactions, the way you have to connect with people. I feel like it's very illuminating for all business relationships.
Oh yeah. Without a doubt, it teaches you how to sell and how to be personable and how to be trusting
and for those things to be malleable.
Yeah. So, right now I'm just delivering pizzas and recording podcasts and selling CBD online.
Have you tried delivering podcasts and recording pizzas?
No, that would be very interesting.
Could be a game changer.
Could be. I found my niche market. Thank you, Mark. No problem. So you took all your experience and all like the great memories that you had, and you put them into molding your own chapter up in Alaska. On average, I know you worked a lot on it because there was a lot of us, including myself, that didn't do jack shit to like help with the process, right? I think when it first started, it was you and Dave, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was right. Starting it. And how many hours a week do you think you put in? Like just doing ultimate fraternal work?
I think it changed. I mean, the early parts are just fun. It's just seeing if there's going to be anyone that even wants to do such a thing, which is fun. It doesn't even feel like work, which is the same for a lot of the stuff of actually doing the fraternity stuff. The paperwork part of it, once it there were 15 to, I don't know, 25 of us, something like that. Once we got to that point, the paperwork and the real challenging part of it started. But even then, I would say most of it was sort of just recording our activities. So honestly, probably not more than 8 hours a week, something like that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that of actual difficult or not physically intensive, but mentally arduous tasks, probably like 8 hours. But there was other stuff involved, but there was fun stuff like hanging out with people and doing charitable events and stuff like that that I wouldn't. Those things are like a break to me. It wouldn't register as work. So.
When I got involved more, I was working a lot too.
Yeah.
And then like I was a terrible student. I'm still a terrible student. But when I got involved, it just seemed like there was a lot of moving parts going on. And so when I took over as president, I was like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
Like, how does he do all of this? So, and there was simple tasks, but it was like, it'd be like five or six simple tasks, which my brain would take as, oh my goodness, this is going to take me several hours.
Yeah. Everything becomes more and more bureaucratic, the more real it is, especially with the university has all its regulations and then the national fraternal organization has all its requirements. And most of them are filling out forms and things like that.
Yeah. So it's just staying up to the day to day, which I failed as a leader. And, but you learn from those lessons.
For sure.
So, speaking of the fraternity though, how many of us do you still keep in contact with? Like from the Alpha Kappa chapter?
Many, to some degree. I would say, I really don't keep routine contact with all but a few people.
Mm-hmm.
But as much as I keep contact with people, I would say most of you guys that I found with are at least like once a month, every couple of weeks, something like that in the range, exchange messages or stuff like that.
Or in my case, every year and a half.
Yeah.
I think, but that's my MO. That's my whole niche.
Yeah. It's my thing. I think that's the way it is for a lot of people, maybe especially typically guys just sort of go off into the world and figure your lives out and are able to come back like nothing was ever missing after the time doesn't really matter. Just pick up where you left off.
That's true. I really thought about it like that, but I think most of my guy friends are just the same as I am.
Yeah, without making it too stereotypical, but I do think...
We'll stereotype it. We're just going to generalize it.
Yeah. Generalizable, I think it is particularly... Guys, I'm sure there are many women who have same experience.
Probably, but no. Yeah. Now let's talk about something super, super serious.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to shift gears.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah. D&D.
Okay.
Dungeons and Dragons. Broke my cherry when it came to, or popped my cherry. Broke your cherry sounds very violent. Popped my cherry. When it comes to Dungeons and Dragons, which I don't know how many people can say, yeah, I never played it until I was 20 something years old.
Yeah. And oddly enough, I think that's most people that I've played with. And it was also my first experience. I was the DM in my first ever game of Dungeons and Dragons.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So you're just so creative. It seemed natural for you to be in that position.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
And
I enjoy it more than probably anything, more than writing. It's like collaborative writing with immediate feedback. You get, I like feedback a lot, but not the anticipation of feedback. So it takes that middleman of time out.
That's true. Are you running campaigns right now?
I am.
How many?
Actually, only one. I was playing in one and running one up until about a month ago. And now I'm just running one. But with three of the people from our campaign, we've continued playing for since then. So I don't know, 5 years.
Really?
Yeah. My wife.
Oh, shit. How do I hop back in this?
We play every week till the end of this month. We're playing twice a week, but usually we play once a week on a weekend. Right now it's all internet based, so it's very doable.
So with like Felipe and Christian, and yeah. Is Dave still involved?
Not Dave.
Do you talk to Dave?
I have a little bit. It was a little tricky. He was back in Afghanistan a while ago as a contractor.
Oh, shit.
So we played fantasy football together and had a couple interactions here and there. But yeah, not a steady contact.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's back now, but I don't know if that's something he is doing cyclically. But yeah, so it's Felipe and Christian from our group, and then my wife Lauren, and then we have two other people new now. But yeah, for three campaigns, it was just the three of them and me as Dungeon Master going on adventures. The four of us have kept it alive, though. Same world. So there are still echoes,
really?
Echoes of your first character are still out there.
I definitely want to get involved. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how often I can be. You know, Domino's is pretty strenuous.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, actually, no joke. When I just to like sidestep just real quickly. Mm-hmm. When I got hired on at HEB, which is a grocery chain down here in Texas, and Domino's at the same time. Kind of hoping I'd work like 2020.
Yeah.
And this was one whole COVID thing. So. When everything started hunkering down and shelter in place, I couldn't knock doors. So that's what motivated me to get these jobs. Right. It's like, okay, I need to stimulate some kind of income because I don't know how long this is going to last, right? If it lasts for a month, I'm good. If it lasts for 6 months, not so good, right? Like, not so good. After that, money runs out. Yeah. And so I started working there. HEB was doing like this weird bidding situation where like I wasn't necessarily a part-time worker. I just bidded for available shifts, which was never. There was never an available shift.
That's a rough system.
Uh-huh. And then I walk into Domino's and I go, yeah, so can I work more than 20 hours? They go, 20 hours? You can work as long as you want. So I've been averaging about 55, 60 hours there.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And so my wife is like, you need to like slow down. Cause this morning I'm like, I didn't want to get up. I got off work at like 11:30 last night. And I was like, I stayed up, did some stuff for my little side passions and went to bed at like 1:30 and then was up at like 7.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, let's do this day again. Let's go.
Sleep is the only enemy.
Yeah. So, but yeah, depending on what days you guys meet, cause I don't have a set day off. That's why when you like setting up this schedule,
right.
You're like 24 hours in advance. I'm like, that's actually pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I just don't know when I have off to do it. And so it just so happens that I'm like, oh, I don't work until the evening. Hopefully he's available. And you were. So yeah, that's why we're doing
almost,
this.
I have almost the opposite issue where I have basically all of my time is available. I just have to know.
Like shift
so I
around.
Don't, yeah. So I don't do other things productive.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
But yeah, we're finishing our campaign at the end of this month, our fifth campaign, I think. And then once that is done, it will be figuring out new schedule and we'll definitely have space for people. We have one person leaving for sure. So there would be room and, oh yeah. And the times are whatever works for everyone. We'll only do one session a week, but it is once a week on a routine schedule.
I'm just let me know, when I can hop in there. So if I get into the Border Patrol, which I just finished my medical and my psychological evaluation, they had to make sure I wasn't crazy. I will probably be at the Academy in New Mexico this time next month. Maybe. I'm kind of hoping, because then that's when pay starts and that's when like I can start learning.
What's the level of involvement of that? Is that a like residential program thing, or is it just every day full time training?
It's actually pretty interesting. It's kind of how it was described to me is that it's basic training mixed with, it's not like basic training. What do you say? It's like college with PT. That's what he said. So it's Monday through Friday. You have Saturdays and Sundays off to do whatever you want. But most guys spend that time studying.
Right.
Because, and I don't know Spanish. I'm not proficient in Spanish. And they spend about 186 hours teaching you Spanish in about 3 months.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so I the academy, if you're proficient in Spanish, is only about 56 days.
Right.
So it's less than 2 months. If you don't know Spanish, then it's 95.
That's still not bad. Yeah,
it's not bad at all. And the fact that it's Monday through Friday, you have weekends off. You're waking up early to do PT, but then you have classes and trainings for the rest of the day. Yeah. And then you're done. Like from my understanding, you're done at like 5 or 6 PM and then you have the evenings to yourself. And so you're in a dorm room. So, my wife can't be with me, which makes sense, right? Like that's, you're not there to be like in a family setting. You're there to learn and become a law enforcement agent and right. a federal agent for that matter. But I would still be able to run campaigns and publish podcasts and sell CBDs and stuff like that. So that's also another benefit, versus going into the military where it's like, you know, instead of 3 months, it's longer.
Yeah. Right?
Sure. And there's no contact with the outside world. So it's like, cool, half a year, you know, just shut down all momentum of both my companies. Great. So I am. It's definitely a different situation. But yeah, I'd be totally, totally fucking down to get involved. I wanted to do that fast food one that I sent you guys.
Yeah,
I thought that was just fucking hilarious. But I literally have not. I haven't made time to like look more into it. Nor have I like really like had time because I've prioritized other things that I'm doing, but I think that's something that we'll have to look into in the future.
Yeah. Can touch base in a couple of weeks. See where you're at.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, are you as a writer, I think the main thing for writers to do is to like get exposure, for their writings, right? Like gain some kind of recognition that way. When the time comes where you're like sending out your stuff to publishers or however you're going to work around it, if you're going to self-publish or anything like that. Are you publishing anywhere? Like, do you have a website? Do you have a blog? Do you have anything that people can go to?
Nope.
Nope. Okay.
Yeah. I started to focus on the PhD thing, and then this will be a whole complete work. It's a collection of related short stories.
Cool. So
yeah, that will be, once I finish with this, it will transition into trying to market that to publishing, possibly some of them as individual stories ahead of that. But I think the nature of it, that I'm hopeful that it will get picked up as a whole body of work. I think the stories inform one another in interesting ways.
Well, and it'll be Dr. Riley. So
yeah.
That's going to be badass. There's going to be two Dr. Rileys in the world.
I'm sure there are two more.
far more. At least two more are being added to the ranks of Dr. Riley's.
Hopefully.
Oh, that's badass. Well, I know I'm going to have to get off of here soon. Is there anything else that you want to discuss in our first round? I'm definitely going to have you on again.
Yeah, if I ever get to that publication stage, I'll have to come here and have a discussion as an author and go more in depth in the
absolutely
philosophical aspects of it or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to re-up. I was talking to Al-Amin just a few weeks ago. He was one dude that just like dropped off the face of the earth for several years and finally got in contact with. And we immediately just went back to our roots of just philosophizing together.
Yeah.
So, we'll have to get some of those moments on recording.
For sure.
Between you and I, too. Well, Mark, since you don't have anything else to plug, do you want to plug your social media or anything like that? Gain some more followers or anything?
Nope. I'm not such a person. I'm invisible to the world.
Hey, you know what? That's okay. I mean, there's authors that thrive in that, right? Where you don't need the fame. You don't need that. You don't need people bombarding you.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe I'm actually J.K. Rowling. This is my like cover. Nobody's seen nobody's seen her in person, right?
Right. Wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me. Or that could just be whoever we've seen in the news. Could
yeah,
just
like be the Mandarin a puppet in the Iron Man. It's an actor. It's like, what?
That's it.
when you've got that Harry Potter money, you can do whatever you want.
Honestly, she's a billionaire. She can do whatever she wants.
She's a dozen alien life forms that are paying in actors to cover.
Well, you know what? I've actually like, this is one conspiracy theory that I just like can't kick, where there's like all the, like the successful people, right? Just think of like in any industry, the most successful people, how human are they actually?
The reptile people.
That one. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. That one always like kicks my ass. I'm like, oh, I wonder. It's not the Illuminati. It's the reptilians.
They're congregating in all the sunny places of the world.
That's it. They're
cold-blooded.
Coincidence? I think not. Well, Mark, I loved having you on. Thank you for making time for this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And definitely keep me in the loop with D&D. I'm down. I miss those days. I miss you guys. Send my love to Lauren, and I'm rooting you both on during your quest to finish your PhDs.
Thank you. Likewise. I look forward to meeting your new family.
Yeah. You're going to love her. She's great. She's fierce. Fierce. Yeah. She probably won't play D&D with us though.
That's all right. It's not for everyone.
All right, man. No. All right, man. I'll talk to you later. And I'll send you the link when this is published. It's coming out on Sunday.
Awesome.
Awesome, brother. Enjoy the rest of your evening. It's, what is it there? Like 7?
It is almost 7 p.m. Almost? 5 in the afternoon.
Oh, almost 5. Okay. Awesome. There's a 6-hour difference. That's right. All right, brother. I'll talk to you later.
Yep. Later, man.
Peace.
All right, Kantians, that's all we got for you today. I hope you all enjoyed. Please like and subscribe wherever you found this, and turn on notifications so that you never miss a new one each Wednesday and Sunday. For your CBD needs, visit us at Philosophers Apothecary at philosapothecary.com. We're offering free shipping on all U.S. orders during COVID, and 15% off of all orders until May 17th, 2020. Just remember to use the coupon code MOTHER at checkout to receive the discount. You can join me online on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. All links will be in the description. I hope y'all have a wonderful rest of the weekend, and I'll chat with y'all next time. Peace.